Covering extraordinary news and the world's most remarkable personalities. Welcome back to another hour of the Jeff Rentz Program, live, coast to coast, and worldwide on the Internet. And now, here's Jeff.
And here he is indeed. Oh, it's going to be a fascinating 2 hours coming up with our friend Jordan Maxwell, who is without doubt, in my humble estimation, the world's leading scholar when it comes to occult. That means secret, not necessarily evil and satanic, but many are. Societies and how they run the world, how our language, our words, our terms, our symbols have meanings that go back hundreds and thousands of years and often go back to very strange genesis. Jordan, welcome back to the program.
Jeff, always happy to be with you. Good to be back with you.
It's my pleasure. You are now on your own weekly program on that fabulous station in Los Angeles, KPFK.
Right, right. I'm doing a early morning. They put me on at an early morning time from about 2 to 4 in the morning, but I have a huge audience because the response I get shows that there's just an awful lot of people in Southern California up at that hour.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and so I've got a, and I do it with my dear friend Eben Ray, mm-hmm. and she's a co-host with me, and we do 2 hours on Thursday mornings.
And made possible by?
And made possible by KPFK, because it's a non-commercial station.
And so, the man himself is still on the air down there.
Oh, yes. Roy Tuckman, Roy of Hollywood.
Roy is, for you in Southern Cal, you know, Roy Tuckman is one of the greats. He's been around a long time.
No doubt about it.
He pulled that graveyard shift and made it full of fascinating material many, many years ago. And hello, Roy, if you're listening, and anybody listening who knows him, pass along my regards. So that's really good news, Jordan. Jordan Maxwell, in addition to being an extraordinary researcher and scholar, is a man of great experience. We're going to hear about one of his experiences tonight. His website is connected right below his name if you are online now. If you're not, it's real simple, bbcoa.com. BBCOA, just like the British Broadcasting Corporation, BBCOA. But what does it mean, Jordan?
Well, it's for the BBC of America, and it's a non-profit organization that was set up about 7 years ago, and so, and not to conflict with the BBC of England, we now just call it the BBCOA instead of the BBC of America, because so many people mistakenly think, we're connected with England, which we're not.
Well, we used to be.
Well, my company, I don't want nothing to do with England. But
I couldn't resist.
My
that.
Company.
What's in a name? You know, some of you, here's a little story for all of you out there. There is a name. It is Sightings. That name is affixed, of course, to the now defunct, and in reruns, I guess, outstanding television series, Sightings, produced mm-hmm. by Henry Winkler and Ann Daniel. And how that name became associated with me is an interesting little story, and I think I want to do this now just to set the record straight. My program for years was called something else. It was called The End of the Line, which I always liked. I signed with another network, let me put it that, another very big network 4 years ago. And I remember the day, Jordan, I was called into an office and informed that my program was going to be renamed. And I said, what? And they said, well, yes, we got a deal with Paramount, and we got an understanding with them that we're going to name your program after the television series. And I said, what? And they said, yep. And I said, okay, well, what's this new name? And they said, I figured it would be Sightings, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they, no, it's going to be Sightings on the Radio. And I said, you've got to be kidding. I don't do that kind of material half the time. What happens when I do AIDS, politics, health? Is that Sightings on the Radio? And they said, no, well, we got to deal with Paramount. We're going to do it. So they actually rammed that down my throat. I despised it then. And when I left that other network after 1 year, I immediately began to try to vaporize that horrible appellation, that millstone that had nothing to do with most of the content of my program. And still to this day, people remember sightings. And bless them, they don't know any better, but if you'll, it's nowhere on my website on the front page. It's gone, and yet it hangs around like a ghost. And the series is wonderful, but the name doesn't fit my program. It never did, and it never will. And so there officially, folks, is no sightings. It's just the Jeff Rentz program, Rentz.com, real simple. But old things die hard sometimes.
Well, and I was thinking it was still called sightings. I mean, that shows you I'm not paying attention either.
It's funny how these things just hang around and hang around.
Well, your name, Jeff Rentz, is so well known. And I have always admired the way that you handle your program and your guests, the way that you treat your guests with the utmost of decency and kindness and courtesy. And I've always appreciated that.
Do unto others, Jordan.
Absolutely.
To me, that is the universal religion.
No doubt about it.
So anyway, that's the sighting story. And it was a wonderful TV series, but it's got nothing to do with me. I used to get email from people, what the heck are you calling your program this and that for when it has nothing to do with AIDS or nothing to do with financial scandals and the Fed and so on?
I know all about that. Yeah. I get emails and calls and phone calls around the clock, and people ask me all kinds of things. And what makes you an expert? I don't know. I've just been doing it for 40 years. why do you call yourself this, or what are you doing that for? You'd be surprised some of the questions that I've been asked.
Well,
not you.
Jordan Maxwell has been really, I think, more than anyone else, in the forefront of bringing awareness, bringing realization to this country for a long time. Before it was chic and trendy to do it, Jordan was doing it. And he has carried a torch for many years on his very able and broad shoulders. And now, as you look around you, Jordan, you see many people who literally have have made careers on your work. And that's common. Another man who suffers from a similar affliction is Dr. John Coleman, whose work has given rise to many people.
No doubt about it. As a matter of fact, some of the more famous people right now on the speaking circuits around America and the world, I personally brought one of the biggest names now out there. I brought him to America and financed his career and sent him all over the globe and produced his books for him and his videos, and I've never had a thank you, not even a call to say, let me take you off for a cup of coffee and thank you. Nothing.
Well,
zero.
People's memories are shorter and shorter in many cases. Jordan had such a career, such a wonderful body of knowledge that he had created literally from his own research about ancient religions, ancient societies. It's just amazing. And when he was on a couple of weeks ago, I got email for a couple of days afterward about his incredible expose of symbols in our lives and where they really came from. But above and beyond that, Jordan walked into a UFO encounter. And Jordan has always, as if you've heard him on the program over the years, his life has been fascinating from the beginning. But you really had a biggie, and it really. I asked Jordan tonight if he'd do the story again, and he said yes. So it's
a
good one.
Well, yeah, I'm always happy to do whatever. But I was thinking tonight about not only that experience, but some of the other things that have happened to me in my life. But
fascinating.
I've written them down. Right now, I have 21. I've been writing these down over the years and trying to remember each one. And I've got 22 peak experiences in my life, which were mind-blowing experiences. And I've got them written down. And one of these days, I'm going to break down and do a book on some of the strange stuff that's happened to me.
Well, I never forget the one when you were a young boy in the automobile and the crash and so forth.
Oh yeah. Oh, that was a heavy duty thing. I was only about 8 years old. I woke up one morning about 8 years old in a little southern town in Florida at the Florida-Alabama border. About 1 a.m, as I said, and I woke up and I was standing on a bypass, a concrete bridge, over on the west part of town, and I lived on the east part of town, and I walk up, I'm standing on this bridge, absolutely freezing to death in my night clothes, and I was absolutely freezing, and I was standing between the big pylons holding the bridge up because it was cutting off the wind chill, and I was wondering how I got there and what I was going to do to get home, and I was really scared because I knew I had no money, so I couldn't make a phone call, and I don't know where a phone is if I did have the money. And it was 1 o'clock in the morning, standing out there freezing and trying to figure out how I got there. And up comes a car. I could hear the car speeding, and I looked down at the boulevard that the bridge, you know, that was on, and I could see a car speeding toward the bridge. It's speeding, and it's running red lights. And I was frightened because this car was so crazy. They're just running red lights. All right, it's a small town. There's no traffic. 1 o'clock in the morning. But nonetheless, this is crazy. They're just running red lights. And then they started up the hill that I was on and the overpass. And as they sped past me, the two boys in the front seat recognized me. They just kind of give me a gesture, and the two girls in the back seat, they waved at me. I recognized all four of them. They were all the kids, and they knew me, and I watched them go down the other side of the overpass, and there was a restaurant down at the other side, and they blew a tire at the other end of the on the bottom of the overpass and lost control of the car. I ran out, and I started crying because I'm 8 years old. I don't know why I'm there, but I at least had the presence of mind to know what a car speeding at that speed with those kids in it and losing control. I knew the severity of the thing, and I knew what was happening, and I watched it crash into the front end of it skidded across a parking area in front of a restaurant and hit into the front of the restaurant, and it was frightening to me. I could hear the glass busting and cars hitting different cars as it sped across the gravel. And I ran down, and I was in tears running, and I remember so distinctly that I kept screaming, and I was crying, but I was screaming to myself, don't fall, don't trip, because I was going so fast. If I trip, I know I was going to skim myself up. And I ran down over to the gravel parking lot and ran across the gravel, and my feet were hurting and killing me because I had no shoes on. And I ran into the restaurant, and of course you can imagine a car out of control smashing into a front of a restaurant. You can imagine what the chaos. And I was inside, I was crying as loud as I could, but I knew that there were people there that I could help. So I looked around very slowly and deliberately looked around to see who can I help and who is beyond help. And I grabbed this old man that was sitting on the floor. He kept motioning for me to come over to help him. And I dragged him. And I grabbed him by the back of the shirt and dragged him across the floor. And he kept pushing himself because I could hardly move him. And I got him out of the way. And then he told me he was all right, go on. And I turned around to see who else I could help. And I woke up in my bed. And I was absolutely, ballistic. I was screaming and crying. And
oh, my.
Totally out of control. Yeah.
Stand by, Jordan. We have to take a break.
Yeah.
What a nightmare.
Boy,
or was it? We'll be right back and find out with Jordan Maxwell.
The fascinating talk continues with Jeff Rentz after these messages. Intriguing nighttime talk on radio with Jeff Rentz.
Okay, back with Jordan Maxwell, who just told a truly harrowing story of a terrible nightmare that occurred to Jordan when he was 8 years old. And we pause just as he woke up in bed screaming.
Yeah, I was...
What happened then?
I was ballistic. I was crying, I was yelling, and my family, of course, everybody in the neighborhood thought I was being killed. And after my dad and mom finally quieted me down, I sat there in tears, and I explained to them everything I saw, the children, the kids in the car, what car it was, and my mother knew the kids, and my dad and family knew the whole bunch. And so I explained to them every single detail of everything I had seen and what happened, the way it happened, and what was inside the restaurant, what it looked like, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, my mother explained to me it was a very vivid, but just a dream. The next morning when I finally got up, I came into the kitchen, and my mom was sitting there having a cup of tea and reading the paper, and she looked at me, and I knew my mother well enough that when she had that look, it was not good. And I became afraid because she looked at me, and then she turned the paper around, and there were the pictures on the front page showing everything I had said, the car, the kids, the whole thing, and it was all there, and I was there. I felt the gravel, I felt the coal, I felt the gravel under my feet when I was running. I was inside, I saw everything. I was there.
How many of the kids survived?
I don't even recall. I don't even recall because my mother did not want to talk about it. It was over. It's done. Don't talk about it, and that's it.
She must have recognized that a very, very strange thing happened in your life, your son's life, and just didn't want to deal with it. It doesn't sound like.
Now, we were a very religious family, and you just forget it. It's one of those strange things that cannot be answered, and that was merely a beginning. I mean, I had, from that point on, I had all kinds of, and I don't even mind people questioning if I saw these things or not, or if these things happened. It doesn't matter. I know what happened to me. And I'm just amazed at how many strange things have occurred. And I've often thought about doing a book just on this stuff. I woke up one morning very early, about 5 o'clock, and my dog was barking in the growling and barking at something, and it woke me up, and I went to the back door and looked and reached through the blinds to see what, and I'm not kidding you, there was a dinosaur. It was only about maybe 2 foot, 2.5 foot, maybe 2.5 foot high, a lizard standing on its back hind legs, but it looked exactly like a Tyrannosaurus rex because its hind legs were very heavy.
What?
And its tail was whipping, you know, like a Tyrannosaurus rex. The tail was whipping. It was heavy legs, small little hands, just exactly like the Tyrannosaurus rex.
Hold on right there. We have to break. How old were you when this happened?
About 8 or 9 years old.
Just as a kid again?
Yeah, just as a kid.
Hold on. We'll find out about the dinosaur in the backyard with Jordan Maxwell.
And I didn't put it there.
Wow. All right, stand by. We'll pause for a couple here and rejoin you as soon as possible.
Jeff Rentz will be right back following these messages on the Talk Radio Network.
Okay, and we are back with Jordan Maxwell, hearing some of the amazing stories in Jordan's life, just a few of them. So you're 8 or 9 years old. You're looking out the window. The dog is barking. What time of day is this, Jordan?
It was like about 5 o'clock in the morning.
Okay, so it's dark.
And the dog had the had this reptile cornered where the fence came to the garage, and he had him cornered so that he couldn't get out.
Do we think chupacabra when we hear this now?
You know what? I hadn't thought about that, but I've often wondered, where did this thing come from? You know.
Huh.
But there are many ships that come in from South and Central America and the Caribbean,
mm-hmm.
Into that area in Florida. Hmm. So one never knows. That's what the newspaper people and the police theorized on the scene when they were there.
Wow, how did you see it? Was your back porch light on or something?
Yeah, no. It was about 5:30 in the morning.
Oh, so you had dawn's early light.
Yeah, exactly. And I heard the dog growling and as if he was in a fight. And so I got up and went to the back door and peeped through the blinds, and sure enough, he had cornered this thing up and it couldn't get out. And it kept, what amazed me is that it kept biting at him. Just as we see in movies how the dinosaurs, like in Steven Spielberg's Jurassic Park, that's just exactly what this thing looked like on a very small level, but just exactly alike it. With the little arms, the heavy legs, and the tail was he kept trying to hit the dog with the tail, and he would reaching out, you know, to bite him, and the dog was just barking and wouldn't let him go. And so my dad got up. Couldn't believe it, and he called our next door neighbor who had some guns. He was a gun collector, and he came over with a .22 rifle and stood there, and the dog was still doing his thing. And the neighbors came over, some of the neighbors from the other house on the other side came over, and before you know it, there was a lot of commotion, and somebody called the police, and somebody also called the newspaper in town, and some of the guys came out with their cameras and was snapping pictures, and finally it was decided that we need to put this thing down. And so he shot this reptile and killed it, and they took.
Now, this wasn't a dream, Jordan.
No. This is
not like the other one. This is real time.
This is real time.
He shot it,
and they shot the thing and killed it, and then the dog went over and just sat down quiet, looking at it, and. This thing looked exactly like a Tyrannosaurus rex, the huge back leg standing upright with the long tail, the little arms. I was, you know, and as a kid, I'm just amazed. But now
I'm amazed now, and I'm not a kid.
Now, I'm still, and today, not a kid, I'm still amazed. Where did this little reptile come from? And I've never seen, I've seen all kinds of reptiles.
Yeah, okay. All right. Yeah, it doesn't exist.
Like
right. Now, what happened to it?
I don't recall exactly. I think probably because the police were there and the newspaper people were there.
Was it in the newspaper, Jordan?
I don't even recall if they put it in the newspapers or not, but they did take pictures because I was standing out there. They were taking flash pictures of it. I don't even remember if they actually put it in the paper or not.
Well, the 14 investigators will flip over this because that date, you may not have the exact date, but you've got the approximate time, and that newspaper has a morgue, and you ought
to
be able
right.
to go through it.
That's exactly right, and they very well might have because, you know, as a kid, I don't follow these things. They just happen, and I go on happily about my way and not thinking about it.
Wow.
So, but they might have. I'll tell you another one that the Fortians would really like is the day the ghoul came to town in my hometown.
The day the ghoul came to town.
Yeah,
right.
An actual, legitimate, and real ghoul.
Well, now, how are you going to top Tyrannosaurus Rex?
Well, remember now, this thing was only about 2.5 foot tall, as I remember, but...
Well, lowercase Tyrannosaurus
Rex. Yeah, lowercase. But,
that story is well worth researching. For anyone out there interested in it.
Well, I mean, I got a lot of stories like that have happened to me that I've just never had the time. And I've often thought I would go back home and see if I could follow through on some of these and see if they got pictures and all of that.
Do you remember what he shot it with? Was it a rifle or a pistol?
Yeah, I think it was a rifle. I remember him having a rifle, and I think he had more than one because he didn't know what my dad was talking about, so he didn't know what he was going to encounter. I think he brought more than one firearm, but I know he had the rifle.
Wow.
And he shot the thing. But anyway, those...
What about the ghoul?
Yeah, that was a trippy experience. I mean, that was really off the wall. This one that you can go and really research, because there's all kinds of articles in the paper about that. I was like maybe 12, 13 years old, and there, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, we started having graves being robbed, dug up, and newly dead pulled out, bodies being eaten on, and whole sections of the body being eaten on, and then they would be dropped in the street or dropped on the sidewalk anywhere away from, you know, maybe a block or two or a couple of blocks or more from the cemetery, and people in the morning would find these bodies laying on the street that had obviously been eaten on. They took all the pictures, newspapers were there, and boy, it got very scary around town. Everybody started locking the doors and watching the children, and it went on, and then it would stop for a week or so, and then it would happen again, and off and on and off and on. I don't know, maybe for 2 or maybe 3 months. But my cousin, my girl cousin, her boyfriend was a deputy sheriff. And he was a young guy, but he's a deputy sheriff, and so he would keep us, we would go over to my aunt's house because he was coming over to visit her, my cousin, so we would be over there to hear the latest. And he was telling us one night that tomorrow night there's been a new young person died, and they publicized it purposely in the paper where the individual was buried. They had police, they had military, they had government sharpshooters come in, and they set up the whole cemetery. It was called, well, I'm not going to get into specifics but the idea was that they set the cemetery up purposely and waited.
Okay.
And then someone did die.
All right, stand by. We're going to take a break. And as we set up another amazing story, we'll find out from Jordan what happens. They set the trap for the ghoul or whatever it was that was disinterring the deceased and dining on their decomposing bodies. Be right back.
Stay tuned. Jeff will be right back.
So they set it up at the cemetery. They get ready for this thing. Do you remember any details of how they announce someone's death?
Yeah.
Were these corpses the most recently buried? Was that the angle?
Yeah, that was the angle. That the the most recent ones and.
Yeah. Well,
and
whatever it was eating, it must have liked formaldehyde.
Whatever. And they had whole articles in the paper, the ghoul has struck again. People were seeing, you know, that people were actually starting to have vigilante kind of guards, you know, men walking the neighborhoods at night with guns. And it was a pretty trippy thing for a little kid like me, you know, for a young kid like me. And I would hear all of these experiences when my cousin's boyfriend would come over, and so one night he told us, he said they had set it up and purposely had said that this body was going to be buried on this particular day, and they knew that they had set it all up, and they had lights already put up into the trees. They had, you know, the whole thing was a setup, and they were waiting for. And when someone died, legitimately, someone had died, and they put the body there. And so he told us, my my cousin's boyfriend told us, look, if you want to go down there, because we wanted, my dad and his brother were the adventurous kind, and said, now we want to go down and watch this. And so he said, well, I can't authorize you to do that, but here's what you can do. Go down to the cemetery after it gets dark, and on this one section that's got high grass around it, just lay in the grass up next to the fence, and just be quiet and stay out of the way. And if anything starts happening, just, you know, keep your head down. And so we did, and that was a real trippy night. I mean, we went down there, my uncle, my dad, and myself. And I remember we crawled across the grass late at night, in the evening, and it was kind of overcast, foggy, and, you know, it was just one of those great spiritual experiences, knowing that something could very well happen and we would be here, etc.
Boy, anxiety, the air was charged. And the mood of it all.
Absolutely.
The atmosphere.
The atmosphere is one of those real strange old cemeteries that were scary on a good day. But now there's a ghoul out, and we're there. We're laying in the grass, and and my dad and my uncle were talking back and forth very low.
Do you remember, Jordan, by the way, how the descriptions were about digging the graves? That's, you got to go down a few feet.
Oh, yeah.
Well, what was going on? Where was it? You remember? Were the big piles of dirt, hand claw marks, or what?
No, I don't. You know what? I don't recall. It's probably he brought his own shovel, maybe. Who knows? I don't know. But all I remember is that it did, all of a sudden, the lights went on, and we heard yelling, and gunfire opened up.
Wow.
And the action really started. It was quite late, though, because we laid there in the grass for, I don't know, how long, maybe a couple of hours or more, and probably close to midnight, all of a sudden the lights flipped on, somebody threw the switch and the lights went on, and you could hear gunfire going off and all kinds of coordinated effort by some of the military that was nearby at one of the bases. They provided some of the guys there with guns, etc. And there was all kinds of scuffling going on and shooting, and the thing got away. Whatever this guy was, got away, and they were shooting it. And they said they hit him many, many times.
Looked human.
It looked human.
Mm-hmm.
and so I was scared to death then. It was fun up till that moment, and then I got scared. And so we laid there quietly after, for another hour or two, while all the guys were walking around, you know, and then we slipped out of there. And so then nothing happened in town for about 6 weeks. It was all quiet. And then we heard in Birmingham, Alabama, a ghoul had struck and was digging up bodies and leaving them on the streets. And we thought, well, there it is. He's left our hometown. Now he's gone to Birmingham. And Birmingham had a big to-do about that, about this ghoul that is now in town. So I know that such things exist. I know that there are such creatures here. I know they are. And it's just part of my background.
What an amazing thing for a dad and uncle and a son to do.
Yeah, I know. If you don't know my uncle, he had been in the war. He brought home all this stuff from Nazis, and he was a real go-getter. He didn't care, couldn't care less. And my dad was kind of like this, kind of like that too. And I was, I didn't have any fear. My uncle, my dad's going with me. I want to go.
Well, it's interesting that they would allow you to hang out even on the periphery because of gunfire.
I know that. Well,
a small town, I guess.
But now, look, you've got to remember, this is a very small hometown 50 years ago. Almost 50 years ago, and things were a little bit different back then than the kind of strict discipline that's required now.
How interesting, the ghoul.
And
I'm still hung up on the miniature dinosaur.
Yeah, I know. Well, it was scary when it was happening.
What color was it, Jordan?
I don't even recall. I don't know.
Was it making noise? Hissing?
Yeah, it was making it... a loud hissing as it was biting at the dog. It kept leaning out and biting at the dog just exactly like...
Snapping at him.
Yeah, snapping at it, exactly. And the dog pretty much was locked into this thing. It wasn't going to go anywhere. That dog was determined. This creature is going nowhere. And every time it tried to move one way, the dog would jump over. Then it would move the other way, and he'd jump over. And then it would move its tail around and try and hit the dog with the tail. But the dog was very agile and very, you know, determined. This creature is going nowhere. And until all the people showed up, and then the dog went quiet and sat down, so the thing was dead.
How many shots do you remember?
I don't recall.
Uh-huh. And did it make a noise when it was hit?
No, it was hissing. It was hissing and biting at the dog when it was hit.
Ah.
And that's just about all I remember of
what
it.
What an incredible story! That one I hadn't heard from the Maxwell. Files, no.
Have you ever seen, I think I have seen with my friend, I had a young friend, we were about 12 years old, I used to stay over at his house and he would stay at mine, and we would go up on the roof at night and sleep in the summer. We'd go up on the roof and just stay up there all night long, and one night we were up on the roof on his house, and we're about, I don't know, 12, 13 years old. And we're talking, and all of a sudden, we saw two medias. I saw a media, right, coming from my direction, and he saw one coming from his direction. And he said, look, it's a media. And so I thought he was talking about the one I was looking at. No, he was talking about the one he was looking at. Mm-hmm. And they crashed. They hit. They hit over the just south of us, and we watched two medias coming from opposite directions.
Hit each other?
Hitting each other and blowing up, and we watched this huge explosion of two medias exploding in front of us, of the two medias hitting. I've never heard of anyone actually witnessing two meteorites hitting each other, if that's what they were, and that's what they appeared to be to a couple of kids.
Yeah.
And we just laid there and looked at each other and thought, wow. What was that, you know? And,
Wonder what. Did you have any recollection of talking in the newspaper about it? Did anyone
No, I don't think anyone saw it because it was very, very, very
early
in the
morning. What did the debris look like as it fell down?
It looked just like, what would I say, fireworks after it's exploded, how it all trickles down, little lights.
Yeah.
That's what it was. Just like a fireworks, boom, and then it all trickled down.
Was there any noise?
No, I don't recall that it was noise, no. And about 2 years ago now, I had a friend come up from Orange County, and we went up to stay with a guy and his wife up in the Box Canyon, up in by Simi Valley, just a few miles from where I'm at now. And we were staying over for the weekend with this friend. And so my friend Jeff and I, and we went up on the roof again. But we were just sitting up there overlooking the San Fernando Valley. It had just rained. It was very, very clear out. And we were up in the mountains, up in the canyons. And I'm telling you, this is incredible to me.
We're almost out of time. Let's again set the stage, and it's done, so we're going to take our break, come back, and hear yet another one from the Maxwell, capital X, the Maxwell Files. Remarkable. Jordan Maxwell is my guest. We're going to pause for news and so forth, and then come back for another hour. And during the next hour, we'll fast forward past many other strange events in Jordan's life, and he'll tell us about the Area 51 encounter that he had with two other folks, so three witnesses to this amazing event that happened, and I know the story. It's a good one. Don't miss it. We'll pause and remind you that Rents.com, news around the clock, real news, real time that you need, and take a look at those headlines and work your way right on down from the top, and you'll see things that you probably won't see anywhere else. Remember, over 13,000 of those stories are archived and databased right on my website for you. RENSE, rents.com. That's the place to go for real news. Be right back.